Iambic Audiobooks presents Last Dragon by J.M. McDermott, read by Corrie Samuel. Chapter 1. My fingers are like spiders drifting over memories in my webbed brain. The husks of the dead gaze up at me, and my teeth sink in and I speak their ghosts. But it's all mixed up in my head. I can't separate lines from lines or people from people. Everything is in this web, Isumi. Even you. Even me. Slowly the meat falls from the bones, until only sunken cheeks and empty space between the filaments remind me that a person was there, in my head. The ghosts all fade the same way. They fade together. Your face fades into the face of my husband, and the dying screams of my daughter. Isumi, your face is Seth's face, and the face of the golem. Isumi, do you remember the night before you left? We threw a grand ball in your honour. A skald sang of the glorious deeds. My deeds, my husband's, and even yours were sung. And Adel's glorious song eclipsed us all. 300 cantos extolling her deeds were barely enough for the ones who didn't know her when she was alive. I knew her. You didn't. I don't know if she was really our saviour, or simply the monster who fooled us all. Both, perhaps. I don't know. I never did. I think she was my friend, but even that's fuzzy. For all I know, I was a weapon for her, no better than any mercenary. Or perhaps I was her friend, like a trusted weapon at her side, a trusted warrior. And she is a hero worthy of song. In these letters, I wish to tell you of us and his empire, Alameda. Our empire was forged in bloodshed. First was my family's murder, and my grandfather's execution. Then there was Adel's husband, Tycho, by her own shattered hand. And then I killed one more wicked beast and secured my throne in the deed. I didn't even know I had earned a throne at that moment. I was just a girl. I was such a violent fool. You remember me after all of this was already over, Isumi. After you came home and we fought a war and took over the whole world for my foolish husband. He tore us apart when our daughter was born, with your red hair. Isumi, my love, come to me. I will take care of you even from this bed. I will hold you close. I touch this vellum parchment and remember your rough skin. My stylus scratches into the page, and I remember my fingernails across your back. My lips whisper softly what the ink tongues on the page. I remember our daughter fading to a dream, and my dreams fading with her. I remember Adel, and I remember a city. I remember my uncle who deserved to die, and his father who got what he deserved. I remember so many things, Isumi, and I will give them all to you, for one glimpse of your true face again. Faces fade in this web, and my husband is tall and strong, while you were fat and weak, and then you were both together on the deck of a ship, dazzling sailors with only a cloak and smoke. I yearn to see your face again, without all of the others tangled up in my web of death. Come to me. Prolix, of course. I see it in my mind at sunset. Tall buildings have long shadows just before sunset. Shadows rise and fall on top of other buildings, like the fallen and broken future of the structures when downtown would fade to ramshackle huts, when ramshackle huts would fall under their own weight and the weight of the poor inside. There were so many poor. I walked through these buildings before sunset. I found new places each night, but all the faces seemed too much the same for me, all of them brown, with high cheeks and slender eyes, none pale like mine, no matter how hard I looked, no round eyes, no words like songbirds, only the purring and the clicking of Prolix. That language sounds like cats dying slowly. I thought in words like crickets and birds, and only the pigeons spoke to me their two long notes. Coo-hoo! Don't go. And I walked in this city. Walk 3 blocks, turn right. Walk 2 blocks, turn left. Walk 3 blocks, turn left. I mapped it out in my head. I had pathwork grained into me by my sensei in the Tsuin tundras and the pine forests. I rarely got lost. I always found new city blocks. This night, this stretch of city, the cinnamon and yeast smells masked the normal stink of street. I was near a good bakery. My eyes lingered on the cinnamon sweetbread and the small tea cakes. I hadn't eaten since the afternoon, when the sausage dealer sold me his most putrid creation yet. I was not the only girl whose eyes lingered on the bread. A homeless girl, very young and all alone, stood on her tiptoes and reached up to the edge of the window. She peered over, barely tall enough to see the lowest sweet roll. She tried to stand taller. This only made her sway. She stumbled backward into a pile of human refuse. The homeless girl uttered a foul curse. She sat on a filthy curb and slopped the refuse off of her bare foot with her hand. I slowed long enough to watch her do this, but when she cursed again, I looked away. I was the only person who cared to look. Everyone else looked at me. My face is as white as death to these city folk. Their skin is dark as the cinnamon they eat all over their food. I can still taste bitter cinnamon on my tongue now, and remember their faces. I kissed one of these dark men in a public house, and cinnamon poured from his whole body, bitter and slightly dusty. I can still see that strange man's amorous eyes, slanted over high cheekbones, his greasy black hair in my fingers. I was drunk, and it was midwinter, and I was celebrating the weather. No snow. No snow there at any time of the year. I couldn't believe it until the rains came and went, and then the equinox, and that was that. All the people dressed in red and danced in the public houses, and I came too. The pigeons cooed knowingly all the next morning, and it didn't snow. The seagulls laughed at me from above, and pooped down on the other porters and me, pretending to be snow clouds. I laughed with them, because I was full of joy. I had found a land where a luster of the wolf refused to lay down her white cloak of death. I walked the streets only at sunset because I spent my days at the docks. The men and women of the seaside stared at me less, and I was as strong as most men. I was often mistaken for a man by these folk. I was a porter among their strong men. The other porters avoided me, or chased me off with large numbers and empty threats. None would work with me. I did what I could alone. After work, I wandered the city until I grew tired. Then I returned to the docks, and slept until the first boats of morning rang their sea bells. I shared an alley with 2 beggars and a large pack of tomcats. I slept with my back against the white plaster wall of a warehouse. A jagged metal rod was always ready in my lap. The 2 old beggars picked through piles of garbage they had collected, giving what little edible things they found to the cats. Then the old men found a public house and drank as much as they could afford. I woke up when they returned because they sang slurring songs. They slept and drifted in and out of sickness until morning. Some nights they touched each other gently. I slept through it all as best I could. Their noise and stench kept me from sleeping too deep. They left me alone. My eyes closed, my face pointed at the fire. I sat up and tried to ignore the salt smell in the air and the lurch beneath our floor. For days after this boat, I would feel the ocean in my bones, pushing and pulling. I hated the oceans. When I had any food, I gave it to the children of the boat, mewing at my legs like tomcats. Uncle Seth touched my forehead.
"Are you asleep?"
he whispered. "Not yet," I said.
"Are you feeling better?"
"No."
"I hate the ocean too,"
he said.
"Last time I saw it, I nearly lost my leg."
"I know," I said.
"I was bitten by a luster of the wolf," he said. I sighed. He didn't listen to me.
My leg swelled up like a sausage. Baba cut me at my knees and drained the yellow pus away. Another shaman, all the way from Pascanas, had come to the village too. He had come to fight the diseases there. Baba and I had only come to trade for herbs and to discover the village this way. She never got it. I nearly died. The shaman from Pascanas fed me all kinds of things. All of them tasted terrible. They thought I was going to die. I thought I was, too. My leg hurt so much. A whole village was infected with the same disease. People walked around with arms and heads all swollen up. A woman had one breast the size of her whole body. She wouldn't let Baba cut it open. She screamed and screamed all day long until it exploded and she bled to death. I thought I was going to die. I smell the air here and I can remember it. Goddess, I hate the ocean.
I opened my eyes and I punched Uncle Seth's arm hard. Do you always tell the same hideous stories over and over again? I said. Or will you eventually remember something new?
He winced. He rubbed his arm.
I'm sorry, he said. I guess I do tell the story a lot. Not much happened to me like that.
He poked the fire with a black iron rod. A bruise began where I had struck him. His bruise was the colour of my sickness after I tried to eat anything. We were on the deck of a ship. Other people sprawled out on the deck, sleeping. We slept on the lowest deck around a wood fire burning in an iron bowl. We passengers stayed near the sides of the ship, out of the sailor's way. When it stormed, we moved below deck until the bad weather passed. Below deck we huddled together, crammed in like seeds in a pod, and it stank horribly down there, and it was so hot I couldn't see. This night was clear enough. I had spent the day very ill. Uncle Seth told me to lie down, and he would take watch, at least until I felt better. He told me that story 3 times in 1 week. I had heard it before, too many times. We had little to do on our long journey besides talking. We only had each other to talk to before we really learned the new language. If you want my sympathy, you won't have it, I said. The first time you said it, I felt sympathetic. Now I'm just sick of hearing about it.
I'm sorry, he said. I just felt like talking, that's all. I just wanted to say something.
A person at our fire rolled over and grumbled at us. We knew that he had told us to be quiet, though we didn't know precisely what he had said. We waited until the man's eyes drifted shut. I spent my day throwing up, I whispered. I don't want to hear about sickness. Tell me something else. Seth leaned in close. He whispered into my ear.
Right, I'll tell you a story about a shipwreck.
A shipwreck? I snorted. How comforting.
A ship just like this one, he said. I heard about it in that village. The other shaman told me. I don't remember his name. Close your eyes, Sean. Lay back and close your eyes.
I found a remotely comfortable place on the foul-smelling wooden planks. The deck smelled like bird shit and old fish. I placed my hand beneath my head. Uncle Seth's voice whispered over a vast abyss of darkness. I felt him breathing into my ear. I felt the heat of him close to me. He whispered a story. Festphazen stared at a spider web with glassy eyes. He stared at the web's ghostly shadow flickering in the torchlight. He tapped his fingers in time to Partridge's voice. He growled. He flashed his steel fangs. The spider was the monster, though. Fest was only a man. The coin-sized monster held still while its shadow swam through stones. Its mandibles were only a slight twitching in the darkness, across the trapped fly's wiggling back.
"Seth told me about icebergs once," said Fest too loudly. "And a shipwreck."
"Seth told me that story," I said. "He didn't tell it to me very much."
"He didn't like it," said Fest.
He looked down from the spider.
"That's why he didn't tell it much. How did it go again?"
ship came into shore, far from port, to escape a strong storm out at sea. It struck an iceberg and started to sink. Everyone on board jumped into the water to try to swim to the shore, even though it was far too far away to survive in the frigid water. One woman didn't scream and didn't run away. She was a shaman. She cried out and cried out to the men who swam away, "Why do you flee?" The men screamed back, "The ship is sinking." "The ship sinks into the same water you jump into," she shouted. "Why do you hurry so to your deaths? If we stay here, we can wait and eat a meal before we meet the goddess." And the crew who were left nodded at her wisdom. They stayed, they started a fire, and as the ship slowly sank, they feasted on all the food they could find. The ship sank so slowly that the men and women climbed up and up the deck with all their food. The ship finally got so low that only the part caught on the iceberg remained. The sailors picked up their shaman and carried her over to the very iceberg that sank the ship, with all of their food. They sat on the iceberg, feasting into the night, singing and praying to Alastor. When morning came, the iceberg had run aground only half a day away from Lee, where they had been journeying anyway. And the other sailors, who fled the boat, never heard from again. When this story is told to children, the ending is softened into a dream. The men who jumped into the water collected together into one mass to keep warm. They swam and swam, and eventually grew fins and long noses that point always to shore. They jump out of the water, but they know that they have swum too long and can never fully return to land. They are dolphins, saved by the mercy of the goddess, but damned by their own fear of death, never to return home. A children's story. How lovely. If it is true, the men drowned. Men don't turn into dolphins, merciful goddess or no. How do you know? I know. That is all. Men don't turn into dolphins. Do the children believe you? Maybe. Then maybe others know something different. Perhaps. Some nights, in my alley all alone, a shadow passed over me, and I jumped up with the metal rod in my hands, ready to fight. These nights were longer than the rest. I couldn't sleep at all. I don't know if the feet running away in the night were real or a dream. I just couldn't face them with my eyes closed. I stared into the street with the weapon in my hands. Not even the tomcats bothered to watch over me after Seth was gone. The two drunk beggars snored. The cats moved in and out of the filth on the cobblestone. I looked every evening for my Uncle Seth and also my grandfather in that last gigantic city where our grandfather had disappeared. My uncle and I had fallen apart in the human herd of ship docking. I walked the streets because I was looking for both of them. I did not know what to look for, except our white skin, our round eyes, and maybe even red hair. The brown faces stared at me. All morning I moved boxes and luggage for coins when the other porters weren't looking at me. I ate terrible sausages and drank bitter wine in the mid-afternoon, and it cost me everything I had earned. Mid-afternoon was too hot to do anything but wait for Alastor to pull her eye away from the earth. When she turned away and cracked open her cool, winking eye, I was already far away, walking over bridges or through crowded marketplaces or sombre yards of wicked temples. Strange idols packed in between the alleys and the buildings. The buildings were as close as hedges. Little light reached the street. People in high windows shouted out, "Kaia!" and trash sloshed out from their windows. Refuse, human shit, dead rats, crumpled scraps of cloth. It piled on the street and drifted into gutters. A low fog of flies was constantly at the ankles. Pigeons and rats and small dogs lived down there. Small children lived there too. Cats sat above these things, on the window sills and broken crates of the alleys. Children sat there too. So did adults. So did I. Closer to the docks it wasn't so bad. More storehouses, fewer permanent residents, and a light drizzle every day to wash the worst of it away. The further inland I went, the worse it was. Too many people. My goddess, that city stank. I fought all the time on the streets. I punched men in the nose. I threw thieves into their own blades. I blooded the eyes of porters who pushed me away. I punched and kicked and dodged every day. Only one fight sticks to this head. A middle-aged girl with kinky dark hair and slanted prolix eyes reached out a hand to me just after evening twilight. I was hurrying back to my alley, but she had caught me in the night and in the dying crowds. I probably looked more like a man in lingering light, because my filthy shirt hung loose and hid my curves in the shadows. Her fingers reached up my arms. I stopped. She wore ribbons upon ribbons upon ribbons. All the colours of every flower rippled and glimmered a flash of skin when the breeze kissed her. She ran a hand down my white face. I had a sunburn on my neck, and her finger was cool across it. I shivered. She whispered a mixture of Prolix and Rihanna to me. I only understood some of it. I had not heard Rihanna until the city gypsies spoke it, and I didn't know any of it. I still don't. "Would you like cool water? A drink from the warmest?" I pulled away, and she grabbed me tighter and pulled me close. She cooed with the throaty rapture of a pigeon. "Don't go." She smelled like dust, sweat, and flowers. I pushed her off of me. I pushed her hard. She clattered on plaster. "Ooh." A man appeared behind me quick. He pressed a dagger into my throat. He snarled. He walked around my still body with the dagger nibbling at my skin. I could understand him because he spoke Proliuxian slowly.
"You plague witch. You damage my girl. I damage you."
He had eyes like black stones. His wide body puffed up to his one arm. His one arm pushed out to his dagger. Skin hung on top of those cruel intentions, flabby and loose. Every muscle in his body trembled. I knew I could kill him because he was too tense. He held a thin, jagged dagger as long as my forearm. He reached his other hand up to my skin and stroked my arm. He moved his hand to my chest.
"Are you girl or boy?" he said. "I think you girl. Do you got tits there, girl? Tits as white as your face? What colour your little eyes, I wonder?"
I smiled and touched the hand that held the dagger. I moved slowly. I moved with the eyes of a lover. My other hand went down to his pants. He smiled.
"You goer, ain't you? Yeah, I looked you and knew you goer. Freaks are always goer. Take what they get."
I moved before he could stop smiling. His wrist snapped like chicken bones. I tugged and twisted to ruin it forever. I tossed him against the same wall. The man held his snapped wrist. I held his knife. I winked and gave him my best awkward Proliuxian. "You are goer. You are goer to not here." He stood up with a curse in his heart. He kicked at me and punched with his good hand. I dodged the kick. I stabbed him through his fist with his own knife. His blood was deep purple, nearly red. He jumped back. He yowled. The street crowd had parted and watched patiently for our exchange to end. In a city in my homeland, beyond the mountains, any man would stop this fight. With Seth missing, I was the only one who could stop this fight. I said, "Hand heal, angry heal. Pride. I know not your word, but it never heal. Kill yourself your own pride, and live yourself long." He looked at his stabbed hand in wonder. I got him through the palm with his own knife. It trembled against his chest, and blood trembled down his whole body. He backed away from me, with large white eyes and pale skin. Bloodless skin. He moaned in horror.
"I only wanted scare to you," he said. "I just wanted scare you, girl. My hand."
And he staggered away, lumbering like a bear into the streets, muttering in Rhiannon. Behind me, the crowd returned to its quick-paced ways. I kept the blood on my hands all evening when I wandered. 6 blocks left, 4 right, and I was almost in the alley for the night. I'd rinse my hand in the ocean and slip into my resting place among the cats. I leaned into the water and splashed the blood away. A woman's voice said softly, "You are a strange one, white girl, and dangerous." I turned to her voice. Other voices spoke, walking quickly through the darkness of this harbour. A man asked his companion if she had seen that. Someone asked someone else if the market was still open. Someone coughed with laughter at a joke I did not hear. None of these were for me. The woman's voice was for me. A short woman with brown skin splotched by scars like linear freckles smirked at me. She had once burned her ear badly. It was a melted mess on the side of her face. Beneath all that, maybe before all that, was a stern woman and a steady gaze. She had spoken directly to me. She reminded me of my old sensei, when I was still an apprentice rider instead of an apprentice shaman. "You are strange for me," I said. "You'd best get off the street," she said. "Pimps usually have friends." "I fear none," I said. She shrugged. "So come with me to a pub, and I will buy you a drink, and you can tell me about yourself." I looked around at the street. My whole time here, the only offers for company had been from curious men, or women who thought I was malformed, with spending money and desire. "I sell not," I said. "I buy not." "I buy only your food and drink," she said. "I have never seen one as you, and I would like to know more about you." Her hand appeared in the air, held up in a gesture I had seen others do. Her hand was out palm first, straight toward my face. Her forearm slipped from her loose green dress. In her skin, etched in silver and black, a sword aimed at me. "My name is Adel," she said. My sensei was old enough to be my grandmother. When sensei smiled, bison fled. When she snarled, cannibals dropped their spears and begged for mercy. At least her apprentices fled and begged for mercy. I met her when I was just past 12 winters. In my village, I looked down to my leg, and I ran in fear to my mother. I showed her the blood and where I was bleeding. My mother sighed and told me that it was about time. "Women die from the inside slowly," she said. "Women bleed and bleed. Girls don't. Girls live forever inside. When they die, they are born again right away. Women, though." And that night I was sent off by my great-aunt. My mother had told her, and my great-aunt nodded and sighed. I was the second-born, and I had finally bled. Like all the second-born who come of age against their will, I had to go. I was sent off to the grassland, 3 months' travel north and all alone. My great-aunt gave me a spear, a warm cloak, and a hug, and I was sent off north to find a camp that moves with the bison herds. When I finally reached the rider camp, I was led directly to Sensei's leather tent. Sensei looked up at me and grunted. She waved my escort away. Then she tore the cloak from my back and threw it in the fire. It burned. She smiled. I burst into tears. And I was so lonely, Isumi. I cannot tell you the loneliness of cities. I was so lonely. I took the scarred woman's hand. Our clasped fingers swung down to our waists, and then we let go together. "My name is Jorn Immer," I said. "I am north from far, far." Adel pointed down a street. "I know a good pub this way," she said. "I don't understand. Are you from far north, or are you very far north from something important?" We strode side by side down the street. I was no longer walking alone. "Cold, very cold, where from I am myself," I said. I am from far. I am on boats to Proliux. Ride down waters to here with Seth. Seth gone, I am to Seth go.
Adel shook her head. She scratched her skull. This will be an interesting conversation, Jean Immer. Cold, you say? So you are from the north?
She pointed with her hand toward the North Star. It had only just emerged in the evening sky, a point of white upon the midnight blue. I smiled.
Yes, I said, pointing. From north.
Adel pointed west.
She said, I'm a paladin from Rhianna, but I haven't been there since before the fall. What are your people? Are there many light-skinned folk like yourself?
Yes, many women with light skin, many, I said. I go for Seth. He has light skin too. We go for one more, skin like mine.
We reached the pub and stepped inside. The stench of city murmured beneath the stench of drink.
This woman was Adel. Isumi, you have heard of her, from all the scald's songs and the rumours that have spread in the decades. I place no stock in most of them, but I know two rumours to be true. She was one of the greatest paladins once, before the fall, and love ruined her twice. I learned of those things one night, when we were crossing the cold mountains and she was still awake, staring into the milkweed fire. Seth, Fest and Corignes slept hard in the demon dreams, but I woke up from mine. I saw her staring into the intoxicating fire. Grandfather's golem listened to us silently from his place beside the flame.
Always death, always a luster of the wolf, said Adel quietly, laying her cloak down, sharpening her teeth in men's bellies, and gnawing on the human hearts.
Always a luster of the wolf, I said. I poked at the smouldering flames of the milkweed.
Seth never teaches me anything, and he teaches you enough to bring you visions in the smoke. My demons are my own.
Time passed. Somewhere in the night a cricket sang a hymn to our warm fire.
What was his name? I said.
He's dead now, she said.
They're both dead, and it doesn't matter any more what their names were. It doesn't matter what anyone's name is.
It matters, I said.
My demons are my own, Jean,